I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. It's time for Everything Money with our financial expert, Cheryl Marshall. On tap today, a look at colleges with a focus on which schools are helping college grads snare top salaries. And Cheryl, does it literally pay for students and families to invest in big tuitions, and will they see the returns down the road? Before you answer, I want to let people know if they need advice about financing school or need help deciding where or how to decide where to go to school from a financial point of view, we're at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Parents and students, give us a call.
And listen up.
Yes. So here are the cruel numbers, speaking of numbers from the last segment. 53% of recent college grads are jobless or underemployed and working in a job that does not require a college degree. $900 billion student loan debt collectively. So this is a scenario which is requires people to think a little bit more carefully about which college might lead them to a good job.
Well, we're in a different kind of silly season now. You know how they talk about that with sports. We're in the silly season where seniors are going out and visiting colleges and taking their SATs, and parents are thinking about, you know, what they can afford and what they can't afford. And also, this is the time when the U.S. News and World Report college rankings came out, and that's kind of what got me interested in this subject. So not only do students collectively have $900 billion in debt from their student loans, the average college grad is entering the workforce, if they enter it at all, with over $25,000 in debt. And over the past two decades, the price of tuition has risen 20 times as fast as the average college grad's wages. Soaring price tags reflect the rising costs of college's biggest expenses, which are salaries and state-of-the-art dorms and facilities. You know, kids go and visit campuses. They want a gym. They want theaters. They want this and that. So
let me go back to your mentioning the U.S. News and World Report rankings, because we should just pause to talk about how they rank colleges. It's not with a look at what the bottom line will be. It's more about what the academic experience will be. And some would say, rightly so, well, that's what they should be doing. But when we read these other numbers and let people know how bad it is for kids without jobs or even underemployed, it seems that something has to change.
Well, they're not looking at that at all. Yeah. Their criteria, they weigh criteria just like everybody else. And their top criteria is, what is the reputation of the undergraduate academic institution? What are their graduation and retention rates? Their faculty resources, their student selectivity, the financial resources, the graduation rate performance, and alumni giving. And that kind of goes all into their score, right, that, you know, they list of the top colleges. And they divide their rankings up into two parts. One are national universities and national liberal arts colleges versus regional universities and regional colleges. And not surprisingly, the top five schools based on that criteria are, drum roll please, Callie.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Drum roll.
Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Columbia, University of Chicago, MIT, Stanford, Duke, I'll give you 10, Penn, Caltech, and Dartmouth. Those are the top 10 based on those criteria of nationally ranked colleges and universities. Now, what happened?
And those are the most expensive as well, we can say. Right.
Yes,
so we're talking a lot of money to
right,
go to any of those schools.
But what you have to do is drill down more to see how much financial aid they give the students. For example, in 2001, Princeton was the first school to figure out that their students weren't getting enough financial aid. So 45% of Princeton seniors graduated with debt. That's 11 years ago, averaging $15,000 per borrower. Since then, they use their endowment. The school has broadened a no-loan program for upper middle-income families. And now only 25% of outgoing seniors have debt, and the average is $5,000. And I understand a lot of the Ivy Leagues schools have followed suit, but this is the one I have statistics about.
Well, and I think what should be mentioned there is that you're talking about upper income families. Some of these the schools that you've just mentioned have long had a really good full package for kids who are near, families are near or below the poverty line. You're talking about now what we would consider middle class families,
right.
One or two kids, even one kid trying to pay that freight, and that's intense. Hold on 1 second. 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. Are you considering Princeton, Harvard, looking at the criteria as outlined by the U.S. News and World Report, and maybe not thinking so much about what happens when your child would graduate from one of those schools? Cheryl Marshall, our financial expert, is here to talk about cost and risk benefits analysis for paying a lot for education to go to schools that may or may not give you a return on your investment.
That is absolutely right, which is why Market Watch did a survey and they established something called the payback score. Now, it's a much more complicated methodology than I'm going to talk about. You can go on their website to look at it. But the payback score is for a series of schools. For example, just very briefly, a hypothetical alum who spent $100,000 to attend college and now earns $150,000 a year would have a personal score of 150. And like the SATs, the higher the score, the better. But they look at people over a course of their career, 3 years out, 15 years out. And they divided it up into three sections: public schools, non-Ivy private schools, and the Ivy League. Now I really want the drum roll, because I want you to guess what the number one school is based on that criteria.
Drum roll. Okay, there you go.
Georgia Institute of Technology has the highest score with 202. And just like I read the U.S. News and World Reports, I'm going to give you the top 10 here. Georgia Institute of Technology, University of Florida, University of Texas in Austin, University of Georgia, Illinois, Washington, Clemson University, Purdue, Colorado School of Mines, and University of California in Berkeley. And those are the top 10 schools there.
So what we're saying, in terms of the payback score as outlined by MarketWatch, these are students who went into school, paid a reasonable investment in their college education, but came out earning top dollar.
Well, they had a higher payback score. In other words, they got back more of their tuition dollars. But before everybody runs out to apply to these public universities, it must be noted that you know that state universities, we're in election time, are under crunch all over the country. So if you are a Bostonian, you want to go to the University of Washington, that doesn't mean it's necessarily that it's the cheapest school. It favors,
you'll be out of state at that point.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee that this payback math will keep favoring these colleges in years to come, because even if you're in-state, the tuitions can keep rising. So public schools have an average payback score of 134. The average salary for recent grads is almost 48 grand, and the average salary for mid-career grads is $87,000. That's 15 years out. So that's really something. Non-Ivy private colleges have an average payback score of 75. Almost half of what the public schools do. The average salary for a recent grad is 46 grand, slightly lower, and the average salary for mid-career grads are 91,000. By their mid-30s, alumni of the 21 private liberal arts schools who were surveyed are pulling down only 4% more than the public school peers, despite having spent almost twice as much on tuition.
Are you facing student loan debt? Do you regret how much tuition you paid? Is your degree paying off? I'm talking with Cheryl Marshall, our financial expert, about looking at how to weigh your investment in college tuition, your selection of school, with what may be a good payback when you graduate. Give us a call at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. You can tweet us at Boss Public Radio if you have a question or comment for Cheryl. So there's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts there. But if you were to do a fairly thorough review, even understanding that public schools may take a whack from state government, and it looks pretty good to you, you stand a better shot, at least, it seems overall, of coming out having a good payback score, what MarketWatch calls a payback
score. That's correct. But one other thing you have to take into account is that graduates of Georgia Tech are going into the careers that are in the highest demand right now. They're going into computer science or science or anything technical. Whereas if you're going, not necessarily, but many people who go to liberal arts colleges, be they the Ivies or small liberal arts schools, are majoring in things that don't pay as much. Publishing, if it still exists, education, social services, and those are lower paying jobs.
Well, it should also be noted, because we've had many conversations here at WGBH 89.7 talking about, is college worth it, how to not get yourself in debt. Had a young man on who, you know, went through school paying no debt because he made a very clear choice before going into school to find a school in which he could get other kinds of ways to fund it, and he came out with zero debt.
That's amazing.
But he thought about it before. I think this is something, again, that we're saying that a lot of people are not thinking about as they're trying to think about schools. A couple other things. We've talked about co-ops here and whether or not a co-op, because that gives you some work experience along with the curriculum while you're in school, gives you a better opportunity to get a job. The answer is yes. But it should be noted that a lot of those schools that report the numbers of graduates who have jobs do not delineate who's underemployed and who's employed at the highest rate.
That's correct. I mean, that's absolutely right. You have to really drill down on a lot of these numbers and what they're saying, just like Georgia Tech is. I'm sure it's a fabulous school, but they are supplying in the greatest in-demand jobs. But it does, like anything else, it gives you an outline of where you should start looking, you know. And also, it doesn't talk about who gives the biggest financial aid packages.
And we have another point to make, but I want to take Joe from Boston first. Joe from Boston, you're on 89.7 Boston Public Radio. Go ahead, please.
Hey, ladies, thank you for having me.
Good.
I'm just a little bit concerned as to the scope of this conversation. We seem to be viewing higher education simply as a means to an end. And I think that sort of devalues the fact that we've never really had this conversation before in past generations, where we really recognize the virtue of higher education and the purpose it serves in our society, beyond the fact of the job opportunities and salaries that graduates may have.
I think that's a fantastic point. You're absolutely right. It's the experience of living with other people that are different than you, the relationships that you make, whether you're athletic or join a social or what you actually learn. You're 150% right. The problem is that in this kind of strange economic climate that we're living in, and with the limited resources that parents have to put their children through college, I think it behooves them not to make an apples and oranges comparison, but to look and say, would this school be a good place for my child? Would it be the same as a $100,000 school, for example? But your point is very well taken, and it's absolutely right on.
Well, Joe, and I have to say that here on 89.7, I personally have done about 15 discussions about how the ongoing argument about whether colleges and universities should be tilting more toward vocational efforts in an effort to meet the job needs of students, and what is the value of an intellectual experience which teaches students how to think and navigate in the larger world. So believe me, we're not dismissing that at all as a point of interest, but because we're looking at this through the perspective of our financial expert, that's why we're tilting that way today.
Absolutely. You know, I serve as an admission officer for a university. This is a discussion that I have with a lot of families, and most certainly we need to recognize that it's an investment that parents expect a return on. I just want to make sure that we continue to remain focused on the fact that college and higher education is an experience. I see too many students coming through my door who, if they view college simply as an investment, I don't think they take the full experience and therefore the full learning that they can from their time in college.
Thank you so much, Joe, for the call.
Thank you.
I want to make one other point while Cheryl takes a swig of water. One of the things that must be noted about an Ivy school or some of those schools that are very highly ranked on, let's say, a U.S. News and World Report ranking, of course, for academic excellence is that there are some other ways that people get jobs. And that may be from connections and the strength of the alumni. And nobody would doubt that a Harvard or a Princeton alumni connection certainly offers people who graduate from there, if they don't get the great job immediately, certainly have a big boost down the line. Hugh,
and that is mentioned. Alumni connections, just what you're talking about, are critical in terms of job placement and many other things.
All right. Gary from Dartmouth, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My daughter is a sophomore at a state university this year, and I do live in Massachusetts. However, she selected an out-of-state university.
Uh-oh.
And, yes, which is as pricey in many states as a private university. But we were fortunate enough that she selected a New England out-of-state university and was able to take advantage of the New England Regional Program, which offers a tuition which is higher than the in-state tuition, but much lower than out-of-state tuition. And it ends up netting a savings of roughly about $10,000 a year.
Yeah, I remember when they used to cooperate a lot more. I don't know if they still do. And, for example, one of the state universities would have a law school and another one wouldn't, and one would have a veterinary school and a medical school, and people could go with basically the same tuition as if they would go. If they could go, for example, to school in New Hampshire to study medicine if Massachusetts didn't have a medical school, which they now do, and they would pay approximately the same amount as an in-state person would.
We have a thank you very much for the call, Gary.
You're welcome.
We've got a comment on Twitter from Mike V. from Brooklyn. He asks, can you talk about price elasticity of demand and why college costs are going up? Then he says he notes that, but so is enrollment.
I mentioned it before, but I'll talk about it again, which is you have salaries and you have campus improvements. People, young people who go to college now, they want to have state-of-the-art athletic centers. If you just look around Boston, BU, Northeastern, all of these schools have either are rebuilding or building state-of-the-art athletic facilities, and these things all cost money. And also faculty salaries are going way up. And additionally, if you think about what it costs to maintain your own home or apartment, think about what it must be to maintain a college campus. Those
yes.
costs are going through the roof, too.
And with regard to faculty salaries going up, in the same way that students benefit from at certain schools from alumni connections, when the schools are ranked, faculty is looked at very closely.
Yes.
So those schools that can maintain faculty of note,
right.
faculty with reputation, that's important. They got to pay those people for their abilities and their achievements.
Well, they do look at that in the U.S. News and World Report survey, but they don't look at it in the MarketWatch survey. The MarketWatch survey is purely about empirical data. What you pay and what you get back.
Nate from East Greenwich, Rhode Island, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was just going to make a distinction between employable majors and majors that may not be as employable. I'm a recent college grad, and I'm actually unemployed at the moment. And I went to an out-of-state, one of those expensive out-of-state universities, to my parents' delight, and majored in political science and philosophy. And I just wanted to make a distinction that if you wanted to go to maybe an out-of-state university or something that's more expensive, that I would have liked to, looking back on it, maybe majored in something more employable, finance, nursing, something that people really get a job out of college. And, I mean, if you want to just study something for the sake of studying it, which I think philosophy does have intrinsic value.
Yes.
But it's not as employable, something maybe like a state university is more appropriate.
Well, I think that's a very interesting point, but also it used to be, I was an English major who went into finance. It used to be that people like you or people like me would go and get a first-year job somewhere in something that may be more employable than philosophy or English, and then segue into their career. But now, with a tight economy, people just hire exactly what they want. They hire in a niche way, and they're not going to take a risk on thinkers, which is unfortunate. You know, it's great for society, but unfortunately, it's not good for employability. But you can always go and take some extra courses and be an accountant.
Well, you could do that. I don't want to be a career counselor, but also if you've majored in philosophy and in political science, you know how to write.
Right.
And writing is a key skill and a portable skill, so you do have some skills to sell in many fields. So thank you very much for the call, Nate.
For the call. There's
our next jobs.
All right. Rick from Gloucester, go ahead, please. You're on Boston Public Radio.
Yes. I graduated in business from the University of Texas and went on to a career in IT. And I think you have to decide two things. If we're looking at this from a dollar and cents point of view, the best jobs are going to come to you through connections that you make in college. And if you believe that, you should join a fraternity, the best fraternity that will accept you and, you know, build those connections. Now, if you're not the social type, I believe you should go to a junior college or even a community college for the first 2 years and then matriculate into a university environment in order just to have the prestige of that particular degree.
Hmm.
And I think that maximizes the financial payback.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, I think that's
very good
interesting.
Point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the call, Rick.
Like I say, after I graduated, I took classes at a Austin Community College, and I've got to say that the professors there were excellent and were actually gave me a better educational experience than I had at the university, because instead of being one of 500 people in a classroom, I was one of 25 people in a classroom.
Well, that's also good to know.
Really? Yeah. I mean, but I also think, Rick, thank you so much for the call, that part of this conversation, aside from a very practical suggestion, is harkening back to the way we began this conversation, which is to begin to think about the entire picture in a holistic way. And I don't know when you're looking at, I remember how, what I was like at that, 17, 16 year old. I don't think my mind was thinking long term.
It's very hard when you're 17 and 18 years old. And interestingly, I have several 17 and 18 year olds in my constellation who are in the thick of this and, you know, trying to make different kinds of suggestions to them to think out of the box, so to speak. But, you know, you're that age, the long term's after lunch.
Yeah, it's true, but you have to start thinking about it now. And I think this is ongoing tension about whether or not you can balance and how one balances the intellectual deepening, broadening, as our earlier caller talked about, versus being just bottom line focused on whether or not this particular major is leading me to a job. That's an entirely different conversation, and maybe we're moving toward it with the student loan debt being so intense. But Cheryl, I don't think a lot of people looking at colleges right now are thinking about that.
I agree. I'm just trying to poke them a little bit here.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for an insightful conversation, if scary. Do you have a tip for the day?
Oh, do I ever. Actually, it's a tip / factoid after the debates last night. Since World War II, the stock market has risen in the fourth quarter every time an incumbent president has won re-election, except for poor Harry Truman in 1948. So depending on which way you think the election is going to turn, you may want to adjust your investment portfolios accordingly.
Oh, that's very interesting. Okay, well, that's a tip. That wraps up another edition of Everything Money with our financial expert, Cheryl Marshall. We've been talking about the cost of college, looking at which schools offer the biggest financial rewards down the road. Thank you so much, Cheryl.
Thank you, Callie. Glad we're not going to college.
Yeah. And we have some breaking news. Bobby Valentine, the manager of the Red Sox, has been fired. We'll talk about that later in the hour. Miller is back here in Studio 3.
Hey, Callie, I'm trying to process everything. I'm redoing my stock portfolio, thinking about Bobby Valentine. Anyway, we're going to touch on what you two have actually been talking about. So as part of our 30 issues and 30 days election coverage, we're looking at who should pay for education. And I'm going to be bringing you a story about a school in Lawrence, Massachusetts that's designed to help high school students actually pay for their own tuition. I'm Kara Miller.
I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio.